Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hey, hello, everyone. It's, I guess it's Syracuse is a top 15 football program week?
Top 15 football
top
program.
Top 15, really?
Doesn't make any sense. I don't care. It's pretty awesome.
I thought when we won, I thought there was like a realistic, if not overwhelming, chance that we'd crack the top 15. And then the fact that we jumped almost everyone that lost and got up to 13 in both polls, and I guess we'll find out tomorrow night about the college football playoff poll, but like, that's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, we can get into the playoff poll a little bit like later. I'm going to write an article about it for Tuesday. I think this might not go up till Wednesday. We'll see. I think in general, like, we're getting credit for beating NC State, hanging tough with Clemson on the road, and like the Pitt loss looks better and better by the week. So really, like, we don't have like that embarrassing loss or that negative, that glaring negative that a lot of 2 and 3 loss teams have right now, which is great.
Yeah, like all of our results are like outright good, or at least like pretty easily explainable. And even like, you know, UNC, we didn't blow out, but there have been a number of teams that haven't blown out UNC. So it's not like they've been relatively competitive enough where like even going to overtime with them isn't like the glaring thing. It is for like S&P Plus, which I'm sure people are very upset about. But in terms of like what you actually need to do to rank, if we've performed, you know, we probably should have beaten Pitt, but we've performed at least in like within a standard deviation of where we were supposed to perform every game, and we've won a bunch of them. We're probably outperforming our win-loss for once. Is probably outperforming our Pythagorean model by a couple wins, I would guess, if I, you know, went through and crunched that. But overall, it's nice to, like, you know, be reasonably sure that your team is going to do what it's supposed to on a week-to-week basis, even if, like, on the granular level, it sometimes looks weird or we get some, like, weird moments.
Yeah, I mean, I know you and me talked about it last year, how, you know, SU was getting, like, 0%, you know, win chance and things like that, like at the end of these games, that we were losing by a touchdown. Now you're seeing kind of like what the next step in that progression is, which is like,
is us having a 27% chance to beat Wake and winning,
yeah, and still winning anyway. Yeah, like, and that's kind of what's causing the issue for people that like want to buy into S&P and like can't right now. And like, I don't blame them necessarily. Like, obviously, like, you and I like really believe in it. But Bill even has even said that it's far from perfect. It's been shifted a little bit this year to be a little bit more predictive. You also have the issue of, you know, with more conference games countrywide, it becomes harder to normalize the numbers. I also think, and I posited this theory in the comments section, that there could be a bit of a problem where if you're penalizing a lack of efficiency, does that favor ball control over up-tempo? Because obviously, like, if you score if you score 12 out of 15 times, and had like 12 out of 15 like successful drives in some way, shape, or form, like, you're still having more successful drives, but your percentage isn't going to be as good as a ball control team that has 10 out of 10 successful drives.
Yeah, our team in general is just like a very interesting look into like how the Bill C stuff works, because our S&P Plus is clearly much lower than you would expect for a 7-2 team that's ranked in the top 13. But he still projects us to with a, you know, a reasonable chance of 9 or 10 wins. And you know, he has us a very, I mean, you know, I think we'd all think that at this point that there's a better than 83% chance that we beat Louisville, but he projects it as a 16-point win, so that's pretty healthy. But overall, like, if you actually look at the five factors, you know, we're like average in a couple. We're not great in defensive explosiveness. We give up big plays, which we know, and then it's just the turnovers and the field position, which are such big factors that have been so obvious. Especially this year. Like, this year, if you didn't think though, like, if you thought those were overblown things in terms of how you win a football game, this Syracuse team is telling you, like, it's slapping you across the face with it. We are number one in overall S&P special teams. We are number one in offensive field position. We are number 7 in defensive field position. And we are plus, like, what are we plus 12 in turnover margin?
Yeah, I believe so.
And, like, crazy turnover luck. And we've had opportunistic defense. Like, we're doing all the things there that lead to wins where you can survive the occasional mediocre offensive performance. Like, I thought our offensive performance was pretty mediocre in its wake, but when you have good field position and forced key turnovers, you get 41 points. It's just, like, it shows how you, you know, how the sausage of a 7-2 team that might be average in terms of advanced profile, but still not really winning games they're not supposed to win, how that all comes together.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I love this system, because you're looking at, you know, a team that can sleepwalk to 40 points. And you have to really try to see how, like, a Scott Schaefer team could, like, struggle to get to 40 points and like, really effort to get there. So it's
Scott Schaefer team, we were, like, thrilled if they got to 30.
Yeah.
And this team, if we're held to 30, that's a problem. I mean, this year we've gotten held to 30 once, twice. Yeah, one twice. Was a win over Florida State, where our quarterback was just, like, not a factor. Our star quarterback was not a factor for a half. And the second was a loss at the second-best team in the country that we almost won. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, trying to close out this conversation a little bit, because I know, like, this can the numbers stuff can be boring via audio. The good thing for, like, Syracuse is that, and it explains a lot, is that, you know, that field position stuff and the turnovers are feeding one another. And the expert special teams play, it's all feeding one another. So, like, being good at one of those things is great. Being good at all three of those things is a very, very lethal combination for opponents. And to see Syracuse, you know, being able to put those things together and being able to beat. I mean, it's not as if we're facing that easy of a schedule either. I know, like, I've seen several pieces of commentary that we haven't really played anybody. Not true, for one. Obviously, but like even Bill's numbers, you know, to show that it's not necessarily Bill's numbers, like unfair, like seeing our schedule unfairly, like has this 29th in strength of schedule and strength of resume. Like, so no, it's not 13th, but it's also not all the way down to 58th. So it really is an efficiency thing.
It's a pretty middling Power 5 schedule. And like, and we're in the harder division in the ACC. So it's not like, like the much harder division. We'd probably be in that mix to win the Coastal, if not the favorites to win the Coastal, if we were over there. So, yeah, I think you'll definitely take it. And it's just nice to have a team that just does, like, has that, like, secret sauce that gets you over the hump versus so many other years we finished 4-8, but we're like, yeah, but we really felt better than that. And, like, there were so many games that we just couldn't quite get it. And, like, the two games we did lose, we couldn't quite get there. But you're not going to win all the coin flips, but we're winning our reasonable percentage of coin flips, and then we're, you know, winning outright and a bunch of other games that, you know, sometimes we struggle through. So it's very comforting to have a team that actually goes and plays up to, I think they do play up to opponents a bit and sometimes down to opponents still, but they play up to expectations, and you can, like, at leave a game feeling, like, reasonably certain that they had a chance to win or went outright and just did it. So, definitely a nice change for basically the entire history of my Syracuse fandom, and I'm sure yours too. I know that, like, you know, the elders foretold of a day when this was normal, and hopefully we get back to that.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, like, I was a fan growing up, but I don't necessarily have, like, the detail to go with it that I had, like, once I got onto campus. If you look at, like, Bill's numbers, we have 7 wins, obviously, but we're only expected, I think, at 5.4 to show kind of how wildly things have swung in the other direction. I think that actually speaks to, you know, and we talked about this during the offseason, how Dino Babers has, you know, outperformed. So once again, like, he's adding another feather to that cap, which is great. And there's a lot of really good coaches also on there. I think Pat Fitzgerald being one of the other most notable coaches. And this year aside, you know, Kenton Niumatalolo over at Navy, another one who regularly does that. I think too, like, it is also, like, it speaks to the schedule, and I haven't needed to be on this soapbox because this year's schedule was so smart, and the next, like, couple are pretty smart too. Where it looks at where we were, and it says, okay, we're going to put 3 winnable games on here. Like, Western Michigan should have been more winnable, admittedly, if we were looking at, like, teams that we wanted to schedule there. But schedule a team that we could beat. We did beat them on the road. Beat UConn, beat Wagner. So, like, when you start off, it should show everyone who's on the, like, schedule more difficult train. If you start off with 3 wins, and you know, who knows if we can upset Notre Dame, maybe, maybe not. You start off with 3 wins in non-conference, you're in a much, much better place. Like, goes back to that, like, you know, and this year might blow this up, my usual theory of like Syracuse wins four games, loses four games every season. It's what happens in the middle that kind of dictates the rest of it. Might end up winning more than eight games and losing obviously less than four games this year. So not a bulletproof theory, but after years and years of losing all these toss-ups, so far we've been winning them all, which is nice. And I mean, I'd be content most years with just winning half of them. That should be enough to get you to a bowl more often than not.
Yeah, I mean, I think most reasonable Syracuse fans have said, like, if we're in the 6-8 win range most years, and, you know, occasionally we'll have a down season for one reason or another, and then occasionally we'll play up and maybe flirt with 10 wins, like, and that's kind of the general area that we occupy, I think we'd mostly be happy with that. Now, the problem with college football is that once schools and coaches get to that place, they tend to not get happy with that, but we can deal with that when we get to, you know, if we get there. But overall, like, it seems like we're starting to crest over to that area of the world for the first time in so long, and it's a pretty nice feeling. And the 13th ranking's funny. It's awesome to be able to flaunt it. I'm sure if you gave truth serum to any Syracuse fan, you'd be like, they'd tell you, no, we are not the 13th best team in the country. But who cares? Like, the polls are dumb anyway, so let's just enjoy it while we can, and hopefully we continue to make it look good. And right now, the nice thing is, like, I think we're in a good spot where we win this Louisville game, as long as we don't get, like, absolutely... it'd be hard for us to drop out of the rankings if we beat Louisville after losing to Notre Dame, no matter what. And then as long as we perform well in those last two games, we'll probably be ranked heading to the bowls. Like, even if we have, like, a slide down in the 20s, like, we'd have to really get exposed in those last two games to fall out.
Yeah, and granted, we could. There are two teams that could definitely run the ball and have quality offensive lines. I wouldn't put it out of the question yet, especially when you look at kind of what the secondary has appeared to be in recent weeks. But, you know, we have plenty of time to talk about that. Obviously, you know, in the second half, we'll talk about the Louisville game a little bit. I'm just happy to see that, like, again, you know, I wrote this in the article on Sunday, kind of like the, you know, the random number generator, the pendulum, whatever you want to call it, happens to swing Syracuse's way. And it'd be nice to just see even if it's just for this season, but I hope it's longer. Be nice to see that kind of, you know, swing in our direction. And when you look back at the 2018 standings, you see, you know, okay, who are those random teams that are in there? And, like, maybe Syracuse's name is on there. In the final top 25, and like plenty of other schools have had that opportunity, it would be nice to add our names to that list. And again, hopefully that becomes less random over time as we become fixtures, even if it's just at the bottom of the top 25 a couple times a year.
Yeah, I mean, that's just such a step up from where we've been, and I think, like, you know, had the 2012 schedule worked out differently and not been A, stunned stupidly to begin with, and then B, had that Mizzou game foisted on us. Not that we, you know, ended up winning that one, but had we handled that whole situation better, you know, we probably would have gotten there that year, because I think we were good enough by year's end. But it is nice to finally, like, have these things work out, where we had a reasonable schedule, we started winning these games that we weren't supposed to, we started winning, more importantly, the games that we are supposed to, and things are just falling into line. It seems like we're kind of rolling as a program right now, which is nice. And you know, if you end the year ranked, there's a good chance we would enter next year ranked, because people kind of know the name Tommy DeVito. They could easily look and see, like, oh, aside from Dungy, a lot of this roster is back. And that's where you start to, like, you know, being ranked at the end of a season and then at the start of a season, when you can, like, have, like, that full off season to just be in the conversation, would be really big, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little bit of an adjustment, obviously, just from college football media, like national media, even folks who try to cover as far, you know, a reach as possible, you know, beyond just the power programs, really don't talk about us a ton and don't really have a lot to say about us. And I can't necessarily blame them for it. I'm not going to sit around like we do with basketball if a you know, pundit doesn't have us ranked and just yell at them constantly. I think in this case, like, it's perfectly excusable. You know, Syracuse was not necessarily on the radar for teams that you have to be talking about as a top 10 to 15 club. I mean, I'm not stretching to think that we're a top 10 team, but point being that, like, even national folks who, like, you know, talk about the top 25 every week and don't really have much to say about us, like, yeah, they should probably get on that soon. But more importantly, like, if we stick around that conversation for the rest of this season, then, you know, that tide shifts over the course of the offseason, and then everyone has something ready to say about us come next fall, even if we are just on like the fringe of the top 25 or more likely outside of it, but outside and in a much better place to be able to elevate ourselves quickly.
Yeah, as much as it would be nice to, like, as fun as these last 2 weeks have been in terms of what's gone on with, like, the ranking and how shocking it has been, like, it would be, I think the better place to be is we're like, oh, we're ranked 10. Like, it's for basketball, honestly. Like, it's crazy when we hit, like, the top 5 or a couple times we hit number 1 the last couple of years. But right now, it's just like, are we ranked? Okay, cool, check it off. And then it's, like, neat when we get really, really high, but that's you know, the extent of it. At this point, we're being ranked is the norm, and when we're not, it's weird and feels like strange, like something's going on or people aren't respecting the program enough. Getting there with football, we're like, oh, we're not in the top 25. We, you know, they haven't paid attention to this, versus like before, just being desperate to snap that 17-year streak. Will be a very good place to be, where it's less of a story than it is now.
Agreed. A little pivot to basketball here before we get to halftime and then some Louisville and college football playoff talk. For those who weren't on the site at any point this week, well, for one, Syracuse tips off against Eastern Washington on Tuesday night. Syracuse women's basketball also tips off on Tuesday. But talking about the men's team, James, our basketball editor, had a really, really great feature about Frank Howard. Got to talk to Frank's high school coach, his trainer. Talked to a lot of folks who had plenty of great things to say about you know, Frank Howard's upbringing and just kind of like the things that he's triumphed over and how, you know, he's improved over the course of his career. So really great look at Frank, a guy who I think, you know, you would probably agree does get unfairly, like, kind of attacked by Syracuse fans. Always have like that one player on every basketball team or every, like, you know, era for them, like that 3 or 4 year stretch that we group teams into. Frank has kind of been the unfortunate victim of that since like Trevor Cooney left. And, you know, this may be, hopefully, for some of those folks who criticize Frank a lot, and he's not perfect by any means, but for those who criticize Frank a lot, hopefully this piece sheds some light on who he is as a person, and maybe has you second guess the next time you're shouting him down every 5 seconds during a game.
Yeah, it was a great piece by James. I was super impressed reading it this morning, and it's definitely worth the time when you have a slight break from work or a commute or something. If you're commuting in the city, if you're driving, don't read it then. That'd be a strange choice. I will always, like, my Frank Howard story at this point is at the ACC tournament at Barclays Center last year. Someone was sitting directly behind my friends and I screaming about how Frank was the worst, literally the worst player on the roster and shouldn't be playing and shouldn't be an ACC point guard. And it was one of those days where Frank had like a major turnover issue. He wasn't playing great. But it was just like, where have you, come on, like, we've all had frustrations with Frank and also every other player on the team. Where have you been this season where Frank is the problem with this team? He's not, I don't think he's an All-American, but he was a rock-solid point guard last year. He's going to end up probably being a fringe All-ACC player this year, assuming his game kind of keeps tracking up the way it has. And, like, for all of the complaints about the one-and-done era, which we all have both legitimate and not legitimate complaints, like, Frank's a four-year, a blue-chip recruit who came in, really went through some stuff. There was transfer rumors, which are addressed in the piece, that never came to fruition. He stuck with it. He became a starter. He's really, like, he's kind of like the model of a four-year player that you want if you are one that really doesn't like the one-and-done era. And for people to disparage him because he turns the ball over too much on occasion, it was so frustrating that night. And I think it was the game we lost to UNC. But, like, you know, if there's an issue with the team, it never, like, falls on one player. And you're completely right. There's always that one guy that ends up getting the blame. And if for so long it was Cooney, now it's Frank. I think fans need that outlet for some reason. But it's really unfortunate that it so often falls on one person. So hopefully Frank has the year that we all expect once he comes back from this injury. Just really is able to prove those people wrong and is able to put in the year that I think we all expect him to have, because he and Tyus are going to be one of the two or three best backcourts in the ACC. in all likelihood. And, like, he was really solid last year. And if he takes that next step, like, there's a decent shot that he'll get at least some NBA looks. I don't know if he's going to play himself into the draft, but maybe. It's not crazy if he shoots the ball well and proves he can be a, you know, big point guard at the next level. He has that size. So I'm excited to see him. Hopefully this injury isn't a long-term thing. It doesn't sound like it'll be. But yeah, if you haven't read that piece yet, definitely carve out some time. It's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, I couldn't praise that piece enough. I think James did an awesome job with it and got to really talk to a lot of folks. I know folks don't come to News Magician for as much hard-hitting journalism, but it was great to see some of that within our walls. Dan, you brought up an interesting point that it's something like I hadn't even like really thought about until now. Talking about how, like, for some reason, Syracuse fans always need, like, that person to kind of, like, you know, whip around or whatever, just from a, like, criticism stance and all that. And I think it's because the coach is off limits. That's not the case for most teams.
The coach is off limits, and the coach also tends to have that guy, which it's probably not a, like, I don't think that's a Boeheim thing. I bet if we were fans of other teams, like, I guarantee you there's a guy that Coach K just will not, like, Duke fans just have that acute awareness of, that is, he is the Coach K doghouse guy. Boeheim always has a doghouse guy. It wasn't Tooney. Tooney played probably more than fans wanted, right. So he ended up being the fan doghouse guy. But before Tooney, it was Stoop. I'm sure we could, if we just go roster by roster, we could easily figure it out. Rack and Fab both had their moments, but they ended up being too indispensable. But it's just so it's so obvious that fans just cling on to this thing, and it's something that, like, they're not even similar players all the time. Like,
no, they're not. It's somebody who, it's always somebody who struggles early in their career. Like they're thrust in a little bit sooner than they maybe were ready to go.
Because Frank didn't have a huge role when he started, but he was definitely a bit overmatched when he first started playing in, like, that fringe rotation that you get the early Syracuse players playing in.
Yeah.
And Tooney was kind of the same way, where he'd have these huge games, but there were other games where he just couldn't, you couldn't have him out there for more than 8 minutes because he just clearly didn't have it.
Well, then Cooney had the moment to point to in his freshman year, the in the Final Four.
Yeah, which was a completely unfair situation for him to be in. Like, right. he had no business being in that spot, and he was forced into it.
And he was the best player in the 2016 Final Four, and still nobody gave a shit.
Yep. So hopefully Frank, and then the two are others, a different segment of Syracuse fans. There then becomes a fragment that then will praise him no matter what, and goes, like, as far as they need to say no, he's actually good. And sometimes people deserve criticism, but I think usually you fall on that side, because if a guy is playing so much that he's getting this crazy fervent hate from a segment of the fan base, he's probably playing that much because it's either a need thing or he's actually good enough to be doing it. So for Frank, I think it was both, but it was definitely the latter. Like, he was the best point guard on the team. And if you've watched the exhibitions, and I've seen some people frustrated with the team already, I'm like, yeah, they don't have a point guard out there.
Imagine at all.
Like Frank Howard or Jalen Carey was playing right now. Hopefully we continue to, you know, he can kind of shake off some of that, but it's, at the end of the day, like, some people are just never going to be happy with whatever it is. So hopefully he's able to put up the numbers to prove some of them wrong and get the accolades that he will hopefully deserve, and we make another deep tournament run with him at the point.
Yeah, 100%. Before we get to half, just wanted to bring up one more thing that you had kind of alluded to. Point guard problems. The fact that we don't really have much in terms of, like, healthy point guards. Jalen Carey's still day-to-day. we have none of them. Jalen Carey's still day-to-day. Howard Washington's still TBD. Frank Howard's probably a week out. Hopefully he can go for the UConn game, which would be nice. I really hope he wouldn't miss that. Not that I'm really worried about UConn necessarily. I'd rather be close to full strength against them.
We've seen bad UConn teams give us fits.
Like 2 years ago.
Yes.
When that the ugliest game of basketball I've ever witnessed.
Well, aside from UConn Bummer. UConn does not get enough shit for being involved in some of the worst basketball games in both big spots and, like, just regular season rivalry games. They drag the game into the mud a lot.
That championship game is a joke. I turned it off so early.
I've watched all of it because I hate myself sometimes. Not usually, just that one night as a junior at Syracuse. Was literally the worst college basketball. We've definitely talked about this before. Literally the worst college basketball game that's ever happened. UConn Butler. Just horrendous. coming off of, like, obviously Butler getting there 2 years in a row was annoying, considering that part of it was them, you know, stoop slamming Chris Joseph to death there 1 year. But at least the Butler Duke game was a blast. Like, you know, aside from it being impossible to root for either of them at that point, the game was fun. Like, the game was good. And, like, I was clearly rooting for Butler against UConn, but, like, come on. At least like, even, like, UConn beating Kentucky, like, that was painful, but at least the game was okay. Like, at least it was good basketball if you're going to, like, rip our hearts out for one of your teams winning.
Yeah, that's always been the thing with them. But I think, you know, kind of going on the point guard thing, assuming we can get somebody to go for Tuesday...
sounds like Carey's probably going to be the first one back. If I guess it's Howard Washington's like a major injury.
Yeah.
So you don't want to like throw him into the starting lineup for the first time. But I think that'll also be exciting to see what Jalen Carey can give us as like in that role. And then obviously it's Frank's job when he comes back. But Carey, I mean, in a different situation, could have been a starter probably from day one. So I'm excited to see him, and hopefully the ankle sprain, which is more serious than we probably thought. Hopefully it doesn't have any real long-term impacts. As a former ankle sprainee, I can tell you that does not go away unless you like really give it time to rest.
Yeah, I would also think, unfortunately, the biggest change long-term from that might be we might see a little bit less SU basketball at Midnight Madness / no more Midnight Madness.
Yeah, considering Boeheim had a guy get hurt at shoot-around once and then hasn't done shoot-around for like 2 decades, yeah, that might be the case. And that's fine. Midnight Madness sucks. Like, I wish it was fun.
But it's not.
It's usually bad.
It's usually bad.
Once there was like a stabbing, which wasn't great.
No.
There's always a half-assed concert that no one can actually hear.
The time they wanted to have Snooki there.
Oh god, that was awful. Yeah, it's just like some of the stuff is cool, but for the most part, the event is usually not actually good. So if they want to get rid of it, I don't know. That's the end of the world.
Yeah, I don't really care either. Yeah, this has been the long way to get to Bobby's piece from today, which is talking about how like much more versatile this year's lineup is, how many more options there are, how, you know, Jim Boeheim's not really someone known for his like his ability to like change around lineups and experiment, and yet these two exhibition games kind of forced him to do so, and I actually think we came out with some interesting combinations. And like some interesting looks at, you know, how many different options we have to score. And that isn't to say that we're going to be putting up 85 points a game. I'd be surprised if we're putting up 65 points a game. But nonetheless, like, this is definitely a team that has a lot more options. I think that was absolutely on display. Even against D2 teams, you could tell that this was just, it was a team built differently. And it's something you and I have discussed. It's something James and I discussed last week, that where this team is much different than last year's team, is that there are just simply more bodies that can handle the basketball and put points on the board. And that's just not something that they had last year beyond those big three.
Yeah, it was actually like kind of jarring to watch the exhibitions, because last year we were so used to like, these are the very few guys who will play, and now it almost feels like we have too many guys, and this is without any of our point guards. Seeing like weird lineups with like Marek in and out, and you know, Elijah Hughes, I think, is going to be a huge part of the team, but he makes such a difference in these different rotations. It was weird because it looked so much different than last year's team, even though all the principles are still there, without Frank having played in the exhibition. So it's exciting though, because if you're going to experiment, like, there's no better time, because as we've seen, who cares if you have a bad exhibition? We had our worst exhibition ever and went on to one of our best seasons. And obviously that didn't end up being the case this year. We won both of them pretty handily. But like, I'm all for Boeheim, you know, messing around with things and just kind of seeing what works and trying out these different formations, just because like there are so many different unique talents in this team. And you want to know like what lineups you can put out there in big situations, and what kind of like what kind of chemistry you're getting with them. So I look forward. I hope we do a little bit more of this experimentation in these non-conference games that we get derided for every year, despite the fact that they're the same times that every team plays.
Yeah, and not to get into a shouting match with any particular ESPN pundit.
No, I'm sure it'll come up later in the year, so we'll save it for that.
Yeah, I mean, I already teed off a couple weeks ago, but I'm sure this is going to be a recurring theme. But why don't we get to halftime, and then we can jump back into our favorite topic, at least football. Dan, what have you been drinking of late?
Dan, it wasn't a huge drinking weekend for me. I kind of kept it chill after Halloween weekend the weekend before. I did have a Fat Tire by New Belgium while I was watching the first half of the Syracuse game before I started working. And then right now I am drinking a Year One Black Lager from Wolf Hollow. And then I'll probably go have some beers after this because I'm going to go get dinner. So next week I'll have more for you.
Fair enough. Yeah, I didn't have much new this past week. I've actually bought some new stuff that I'm going to have this weekend. And also going to be headed to a brewery on Saturday for a little bit. But yeah, I just had what I mentioned last week, Fear Movie Lions, the double IPA, hazy IPA from Stone. And then also I was at the Rangers Ducks game down in Anaheim and had, I really don't love Goose Island or any AB InBev brand, but it was like the only pale ale on draft. So I figured have a few during the game. So that was fun. But yeah, that's it. Also, while we're here at halftime and talking about beer and Syracuse and this podcast, for those who are in the New York City area or are going to be, the Q's in the City, quote unquote, weekend of November 15th through 17th, we're going to be having our first live podcast in the city over at East End Bar and Grill, noted Syracuse bar. For those who are familiar, Dan will be there, James will be there, Andy will be there. I'm sure several other New York City area Noons luminaries will be there. I will not, due to not living near New York and having a child, but down the road, perhaps. So there, we're going to add the details in the description, but you can ask questions. I'm sure there'll be some Tulane nonsense and other unrelated.
If you're a Tulane fan that listens to this, definitely come.
Yeah, seriously. I might actually hit up Fear the Wave and tell them to tell people to show up. It's going to be after the Friday game at MSG, so a little bit on the later end. So those with children or other obligations, maybe a little late for you, but you know, if not, you know, there's no reason not to show up, hang out with your fellow Orange fans, do a little Q&A action. You don't have to deal with me, so this might actually stay on topic. Dan, maybe.
You've talked to Andy and James before, right?
this is true. Andy and James are actually better at staying off topic than me, if that's possible, especially Andy. And that's not a bad thing. That's actually kind of on brand for us and really always has been. We're also going to have some merchandise. Looks like t-shirts, maybe some koozies, maybe some stickers. I don't know if there's still time to order last second stuff, I guess. So if there's any other merchandise you might want out of us, comment and maybe we can see what we can do. They're for sale, though. We're not just giving shit away.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's coming together quite quickly. So it's really cool that we're able to pull this off, like, in honestly just a couple weeks here. And obviously it's like the best possible we can do it because we have the two basketball games the night of and the night before, and then the football game the next day. So don't worry about, I mean, I think all of us will probably be at the game, the championship game, assuming Syracuse beats UConn. So we will get started hopefully at a time in which everyone can get up to the Upper East Side from MSG, because we will all be doing that as well. So it's scheduled for 10, but I think it's 10 plus however much time, you know, depending on how the game goes.
Agreed. Again, I will be there in spirit. If this goes really well and we sell a lot of merchandise, I can be at the next one.
Yes, if you want to meet John in person, buy some stuff or just hand us money, and then I probably won't Venmo him. We'll probably just keep it. But
yeah, whatever. It's fine.
Yes, if you come give me a check, I will definitely give it to John. Wink, wink.
Anyway. So yeah, that's our racketeering for the day. Let's see. College football playoff rankings, Dan. College football playoff rankings will probably be out by the time you're listening to this, people on the interwebs. But if not, I think we're around 15, maybe 14.
It's hard to really know. The committee does change itself up like pretty drastically week to week, even compared to like the AP and the coaches poll where stuff kind of cycles through. So I do wonder, like, we were obviously highest in the college football playoff rankings last week. I kind of think that will not be the case. I do think we'll jump Texas and Iowa, who were two ahead of us and three ahead of us, respectively. I don't know that we're going to jump, like, Florida and Penn State and, like...
I mean, we should, but I understand why we don't.
Right, so I think it might be a little bit slower. I do think we'll end up in around the 15 range, kind of where we thought we would be in the other polls. Obviously ended up going higher than that. So, yeah, that should be, you know, and just being in the playoff rankings is so crazy. Now, it's nice to be highest in the playoff rankings. That's what shows up now on, like, ESPN scoreboards and everything else. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, so Syracuse fans, don't be angry when it doesn't say number 13 next door name this week, because it might not. And that's fine, because it's not going to say anything lower than, like, 17th.
As long as there's a number and not some weird, like, hieroglyphics, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine. Also, this doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're not making the playoff, guys. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're not making the playoff. The only thing the playoff numbers do matter for, however, and this really is only if we beat Notre Dame, is getting
knocking
into...
Knocking them out of the playoff.
Well, knocking them out of the playoff, but getting into an Access Bowl. Because if we
yes,
do finish... Because if we finish in the top 10 to 12, and that'll depend on where the other conference champions finish, but there is that long shot at a Fiesta Bowl or Peach Bowl invite if we get into that top 10 to 12 range, which is feasible if we go even 9-3 with a win over
Notre
Dame. If
we go 10-2, it'd be kind of hard to imagine us not.
Well, we're in a 10-2. If we win out, we're absolutely in. At 9-3, it's really dependent on what LSU does for the rest of the season, what else happens at the top of this. I mean, there's most of the teams here don't – like Ohio State is – as far as like the teams that are like near the top, Ohio State, Michigan, and like LSU are really like the only teams like clearly ahead of us that have to lose the rest of the year. Like one of Michigan and Ohio State has to lose the rest of this year. Well, LSU already picked up another loss. That's West Virginia. And West Virginia will probably... West Virginia or Oklahoma will have
to
pick up a
loss.
They're going
to play Oklahoma twice in a row.
Yeah.
We know this is going to happen, so...
Yeah, so some combination of those teams will lose. So if we went 10-2 or even 9-3, like, that would be the debate. But it's definitely going to be a bit of a dice roll. For those who are, like, wondering, because I got so many questions about this on Sunday while most of you were complaining about the Pinstripe Bowl... no judgment.
What a day Sunday was on Twitter. That would have been one of the most active days for my Twitter mentions ever.
Yeah, I was like answering things while I was like out at lunch, and like things that I usually try to avoid doing, just because I felt like so many Syracuse fans had like so many things they were popping off about
and, like,
bowl
the bowl
games.
Stuff is like something that is. It's probably dumb that we know as much about how it works as we do. So I don't like. Disparage anyone who doesn't know how the selection process works, because it's so dumb and doesn't make any actual sense. And also, the confusion about the Pinstripe Bowl is very—I think it's very legitimate, considering we're in a much different place of the college football world than we were, 2 years or however many years ago, 5 years ago, and 7 years ago. Also, as an aside, I'm like half watching this Monday Night Football game, and I'm pretty sure there have been like 8 fumbles in the first 10 minutes. It's insane.
Yeah, I'm not watching that.
Anyway, move on.
Yeah, as an aside, I only watch the only NFL games I watch are the Rams, because they play college football at the NFL level.
What I wouldn't give to have Sean McVay coaching the Packers.
Or literally, how about every team?
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, if you want the NFL to be watchable, that's an easy way to get me to watch. A lot of other reasons too, but that one in particular. Anyway. For a quick bowl rundown, I wrote about this last Wednesday after the playoff rankings came out. Did a whole graph about win probabilities, other bullshit. I will do another one of these probably on Tuesday before the rankings come out, just because it seems like something people are pining for. Basically, we picked the wrong year to be good. not to say like beggars can't be choosers, but like this was the wrong year to be good, and that goes for us, that goes for NC State, that goes for BC as well. Typically, 2 out of 3 years in the playoff cycle, the Orange Bowl is just the Orange Bowl. It is an Access Bowl. It's one of the New Year's Six, so it is not a semifinal. The ACC champ goes to the Orange Bowl unless the Orange Bowl is a semifinal game, in which case the next best ACC team, according to the playoff rankings, goes to the Orange Bowl instead. So that in 2017 and 2019 would be the case for Syracuse or BC or NC State, whichever one of those finishes higher in the playoff rankings. Unfortunately, we are in 2018, where the Orange Bowl is a playoff game, and that means that the ACC is only guaranteed another spot, a spot in the New Year's Six if the champion does not make the top four. Champion's Clemson. Clemson even suffers a loss at some point in the next few weeks. They're still going to be in the top four. So unfortunately, the Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl, the two access bowls that would be taking us potentially, or any ACC team, do not have to take us unless we finish ranked highly enough. So that would be in that top 10 to 12 range. There's a couple other caveats here and there. Every conference has this. I know a couple people reached out to me and said the ACC like really screwed up their deal and everything else. We didn't. Everybody else has the same problem. The solution is, you know, don't have your second best team finish outside the top 12. And considering that there are five power conferences and like the top 12 usually gets you in, that shouldn't be a problem, or at least theoretically shouldn't be a problem. That said, it's been a problem in recent years for the SEC until last year. The Big Ten at one point or another, the Pac-12 most years, and this year the ACC, which is suddenly in a bad spot. The Big 12 has also had this issue. So this is not a first-time thing. This will not be a last-time thing for any Power 5 conference. There's also the, to wrap this up quickly, also the other problem of in years where the Orange Bowl is a playoff game, we also don't have an ACC Citrus Bowl tie-in. So you basically have an issue for Syracuse and, again, NBC and NC State of having two fewer bowls at the top tier than we normally do, meaning that the best non-Clemson team is probably going to the Camping World Bowl, and then you end up relegated into the next tier of games, which are all still pretty good, the Sun, the Belk, the Pinstripe, and one other game that escapes me.
Music City, I think.
Oh, and the Music City, true. So one of those.
And we are very close to one of those and not at all close to the rest, so it's very obvious what's going to happen unless we win nine games. I think we get in an interesting debate over the Camping World.
I still think they pick NC State just because if NC State's within a win or two of us, it's not going to matter. Like,
right.
They'll pick NC State because they travel well, they're closer.
I don't think they've been there in forever, probably.
I don't know if they've ever been there.
Yeah,
ten win seasons are so rare for NC State that that it's very unlikely they've been there, which is fine. Yes.
So, like, the Pinstripe feels like it's less a lesser bowl than the Belk or the Music City or a couple of these other ones, but they've been bumped up into that same tier as them. So they get the same, basically, bidding rights on those teams. And while they're not going to – so basically, what we all want is Syracuse to make a bowl every year so that Pinstripe can't take us every year, so that it's like actually forces them to mix it up. But we haven't been to a bowl in so long, and it's even longer for Pinstripe, that – it's just so obvious that they're going to take us if given the chance. And the only possible asterisk is that Syracuse is playing there in a couple weeks against Notre Dame, but that's Notre Dame home game. Syracuse is not getting a full, like, neutral site ticket allotment, so they probably don't even care because there's going to be so many fans who won't or can't go to the Notre Dame game, either because they're priced out, because those tickets are going to be very expensive, especially after Syracuse wins it on Friday, hopefully, knock on wood. And Notre Dame, who does Notre Dame have this weekend?
I think they're on a bye.
Okay, so there's a very good chance that they're plotting two top 12 teams against each other. No, Notre Dame has Florida State,
oh,
so
that's
they're
bye.
Going to win that. Yeah, at home. What a world. The tickets for that game are going to be very expensive. I don't have them yet, and I'm hoping I can go. I have to move some things around.
It's going to be the game day game.
It's going to be game day. It's going to be two top 12 teams-ish. It's going to be a big deal. So I think even though we're playing there 2 weeks before, so many Syracuse fans will not have gone that it might not even be the factor that some people are hoping it is when they're rooting for us to go down to, like, Belk or Music City. But, like, the Belk Bowl is going to be hard for us to ever get because there are four North Carolina schools already. Odds are a couple of them are in the range of the Belk Bowl. Plus, Virginia teams are easier to get to. Georgia Tech is easier for them. Clemson in a weird off year is easier. So that one's always going to be tough to get to. Music City, I think, in a universe we could have. But we haven't been to Pinstripe so long that Pinstripe will probably do what they can to get us. I think BC's like projected to go there now in a lot of places. So like, just keep on making bowls, and we won't go to the same bowls all the time. The problem is that we have these gaps.
Yeah, when you have those gaps, like everybody feels like the Pinstripes old hat. But like,
it's like when Pitt went to the Birmingham Bowl 3 years in a row.
Yeah,
that was a weird thing.
Yeah, like that was weird. And if that happened with the Pinstripe, that would be equally weird, even though the Pinstripe is a much better game. But like, when we haven't been to the Pinstripe in 6 seasons, and we arguably draw better than any other team for the Pinstripe, then
I honestly think the only team they would take it, I think the only teams they would like hit, definitely take over us that could go there are Notre Dame, who have played in it once, and Penn State, who have not played in it, I don't think.
Yeah, they actually did.
Okay, so they did. Like, obviously, in a weird year where they could grab, like, Clemson, they probably would. But, like, the teams that are, like, in the general Pinstripe vicinity are, like, a down Penn State season, and I think there are some projections that have us playing Penn State in it, or a down Notre Dame season. And I think those are the only two teams they would take, maybe Michigan, too. That they would definitely take over us in a given year.
Well, think about it logistically. Like, it's Christmas-ish travel to the most expensive city in the country. Why would you
want people who have people there? Syracuse has a million. Like, we have more New York City alumni than we have alumni in the rest of the state combined. And then, obviously, Notre Dame fans are alumni and are not alumni, and they're all over the tri-state area. Penn State, same thing. Michigan, there's a million Michigan people everywhere. So yeah, those are the only ones I think they would take over us, and most of those teams are usually either too good or just like get gobbled up by other bowls ahead of the Pinstripe because they have these like crazy fan bases.
Yeah, and honestly, like you said, it's unfortunately just a bad case of like bad timing. But before the season, if you told us we were going to any bowl, you would have been fine with it. Syracuse
and
fan.
And also,
X.
The Pinstripe Bowl is fun every year. I can't remember. The Rutgers Notre Dame game wasn't great, but every Pinstripe Bowl has been pretty good. Like the Northwestern field goal against Duke, that was a Pinstripe Bowl, right? That was a whole debacle. BC Iowa was a blast. Both Syracuse games were way fun. Obviously, one probably more than the other for the average fan, but it was fun crushing West Virginia for sure. I'm trying to think of the other ones. Who'd Penn State play? They played.
Did they play BC?
Maybe? I thought it was BC Iowa. Has BC been in it twice?
I thought they've been in it twice. Let's pull up the wiki.
They lost both times.
Let's figure this out. Game results: Syracuse, Kansas State, Rutgers, Iowa State, Syracuse, West Virginia, Notre Dame, Rutgers, Penn State, BC, Duke, Indiana.
I forgot Rutgers has been in it twice.
Northwestern, Pitt. Oof. Oh, so the field goal thing was Duke, Indiana.
That's what it was. Duke, Indiana was a crazy field goal finish. Which was probably the wrong call, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Penn State, BC went to, two straight went to overtime, which was Penn State, BC, and then Duke, Indiana. Northwestern Pitt was a one-touchdown game. Iowa, BC last year was a one-touchdown game. The only Rutgers, Iowa State, I think, was boring, and I think Notre Dame, Rutgers was also boring. Syracuse, West Virginia was probably boring for a lot of people, but we ran for, like, a million yards, so cool. And Syracuse, Kansas State, like, I think was, like, in the top five of every list of, like, best bowl games that year, so we had two like crazy trip plays. So I think we could do a lot worse than the Penn State Bowl, even if it's not the sexiest option, because it does feel like we were just there. That was 6 years ago, y'all. Like that was
an entire class and a half have graduated from like Syracuse. Like there's a lot of people who have graduated from Syracuse since.
I was in my post Syracuse year, and now I am in my many years outside of Syracuse. So I will happily go to Pinstripe Bowl with bells on if we are there, and I'll probably go to Orlando too. That's like one of the other ones I could definitely do. So I'm kind of rooting for Camping World, but it's more of a hassle. I can walk to Yankee Stadium if I want from my apartment. Either one, I'll take whatever. If they want to send us to the stupid. Like, if they want to screw us over and send us to Detroit, like, we're doing bowling. I think I'd probably have a little bit of a problem with that at this point. But, like, we had a goal this year. We have reached it already. And we are pretty sure we're going to at least go to a Tier 1 bowl that most, like, a lot of teams in our situation would love to go to. So, I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, we're also the all-time Pinstripe Bowl champions. If we decided
to... Yeah, we would choose to extend our record.
Yeah, and the other two teams that would... The other only team that would even be close to it, Rutgers, has no shot at a bowl.
I'm going to say I don't think they're bowl eligible, if I'm correct.
They're not even close. They are very, very bad. But yeah, we'd also be, knock on wood, if we went to the Pinstripe Bowl, we'd be the second ranked team to ever be in the game. The only other being number 23 Pittsburgh in 2016.
And that was a pretty good Pitt team. That was the team with James Conner and NFL legend Nate Peterman. They had a really good offense. They beat Penn State.
Yeah. So that's
also beat Clemson.
that's something. But yeah, I think, you know what, like, if we become a perennial bowl team and finish in the 6-6 range, yeah, get ready for a Pinstripe, Quick Lane, maybe Military Bowl like rotation. But
yep.
If we're going to jump up and win 8-9 every few years, that's when a 4 out of 5 years bowling Syracuse team, that's when that program goes to the other games.
Yeah, and it's also like, if we're doing a Pinstripe Bowl every 5 years, and we're doing bowling in those years in between, it's not going to feel like we're at the Pinstripe Bowl all the time. Yeah. We'll be like, yeah, but we also went to Nashville that one time. We had that one crazy year. We went to the Peach Bowl, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, I understand why people are a little bit bitter about this, because
I totally get it.
7-5 Big East team went. How can like an 8-4, 9-3 ACC team go? And yeah, again, it's bad timing. And like, sure, maybe if we fade right back into like semi-mediocrity next year, we'll look back at this and go like, effing A, like we missed our like Orange Bowl shot just because of like the luck of the draw on which year we decided to be good. I get it, but it happens.
Yeah, again, like go to the bowl game. And I tweeted, like, the best possible way to make it so that we're not stuck at the Pinstripe Bowl every year, quote unquote stuck, is to like buy the allotment out, travel well. And I saw this one thing. I saw a couple people tweet like, oh, Syracuse doesn't travel well. Syracuse football fans, they don't fill the dome that well. They travel better than they should.
Well, it's also because most of the people that travel aren't the ones that live in Syracuse.
No. Yeah, the Syracuse fan base, it spreads down the entire Eastern Seaboard. So they are well represented compared to like how good the team has been in pretty much every ACC game. There was a giant section at the Wake game this weekend. I've been to multiple games down there. There has always been. We've been well represented at pretty much every one of those games. Better than a team that wins like 4 or 5 games a year. So like that's kind of a misnomer. That being said, you want to like there are like. The Bulls know which fan bases really ramp it up. So come to the Pinstripe Bowl. Hopefully we have a couple tens of thousands of fans there. Make a whole thing of it. And that's where you start to show like, oh, they will come. So let's invite them to this bigger thing. Like it's worth it for us.
Yeah. And like, to be honest, like anytime I've been to a road game, one of the first things fans say is like, damn, you guys showed up a lot more than we thought you would.
Right.
Like even when we were down in New Orleans, like, oh, well, not New Orleans. When we were down in Baton Rouge, I was in New Orleans before that. LSU,
a nice little pocket there.
Yeah, LSU fans said, like, damn, like, you guys really showed up, like, at a much higher rate than we probably figured you would, and much higher rate than even some of, like, their SEC cohorts at times. So, like, the fact that, like, we do that, and again, it helps that we have, like, it's not a huge national fan base, but there's plenty of pockets.
We have a bunch of people in Carolinas. We have a bunch of people in Georgia. We have a bunch of people in Florida. Like, we're actually, like, a weirdly well spread out ACC stool for a school that's not in actual ACC country. We have these pockets all the way down, like, all the major spots of the Eastern Seaboard, and that's where the ACC is, so it works out.
100%. We have a couple minutes left here. Kind of, I guess, moving on from our alumni geography lesson. Our next opponent is Louisville. It's on a Friday, so everybody can complain about Friday games, except you shouldn't this time, because I don't even know why I have to tell you that you need to show up if you're local. Louisville, sort of rival. They're bad. We're ranked. We're a fun team. There's no reason why you shouldn't go. Guys like Eric Dungy deserve it. Dante Strickland, Chris Slayton, Antoine Cordy, like Jamal Custis. There's a lot of guys on this team that have been here for a lot of shitty seasons. I don't see any reason why, if you have the ability to go to the game, that you wouldn't. It's also the last time you're going to be able to see Eric Dungy at the Carrier Dome. He even tweeted about it, which is very atypical of Eric Dungy.
I like Ferdati had a Twitter until I saw that, and I'm following him. Like, yeah. It just doesn't, it like, it's not like really a thing. So, yeah, he clearly wants people to go there. He's earned that much. There are $20 ticket coupons going all over the place from, like, if you know any season ticket holder. And if you don't, like, tweet me and I will get you in contact with a season ticket holder who will give you a $20 coupon. Like, it is not Just get people in the dome. They really deserve it, especially with how hard they've played this year. Yeah. That's all we can ask at this point. You have one shot left. If you haven't been to a game this year and you're in like an hour radius, just go. You will not regret it. We're going to drop a lot of points to this team.
Yeah, because that brings me to the box score I currently have in front of me. Clemson 77, Louisville 16. and because of Bobby Petrino's buyout, Louisville did not decide to fire him this week.
The box score, and I'm not looking at it, I wrote about it a couple times, it's like burned in my brain. Trevor Lawrence threw 12 passes before leaving the game. They had three rushers go for over 100 yards, none of whom ran more than eight times. That was Travis, ATN, who ran eight times for like a million yards and a couple touchdowns. They had 14 different players carry the ball. They had Dabo Swinney's walk-on son got a touchdown carry. It was like one of the meanest things. Every time I saw the highlights, it was just another mean thing happening.
Six different players had 20 yards or more on the ground. Four different players had 40 yards or more on the ground. This is just a comedy of errors. Louisville just didn't have it. I mean, I actually think the line's a little aggressive. I wouldn't necessarily bank on it, if only because our defense isn't as good as Clemson's. But at the same time, like, this team isn't really that good at moving the football, and they're definitely not good at stopping anyone. So as long as we don't, like, mess around like we have against a couple teams, Wake, UNC, I feel like if we come out the way we did against NC State, I am very, very certain that this should be a blowout win. But you know what, fans, if you want to play a good team, a good program, Louisville has largely been a pretty name program for the last few years. We've lost some big games to them by increasingly bad fashion. Why not show up for the payback, hopefully, and the potential like 20 plus point win against them to get to the 8-win plateau that we haven't been to in, again, like, in the regular season, 17 years.
Yep. I think there's really not a lot. Like, it's a name program that we should stomp out. Louisville's worse than their record shows.
You and me were talking about the clown fraudulence, like, from in the opening weeks.
They got blasted by Bama, and honestly, the 51-14 loss against Alabama is one of the most defensible things that is on this resume. They beat Indiana State and FCS program 31-7. Fine. They beat a very, very bad, like, sneakily really bad Western Kentucky team, 20-17. They have not won since. They have not had a win expectancy per S&P Plus of over 30%. That was a 28-24 loss to a bad Florida State team. They have, their last three games, they've had win expectancies of 2% in BC, 38-20, 2% in Wake Forest, 56-35, the same team that we just beat pretty handily, even though we didn't play well. And then a hard goose egg, their third 0% of the year, at Clemson, the aforementioned 77-16, and somehow worse than a 61-point margin in terms of, like, how it looked.
Since Bobby Petrino's a scumbag, this is delightful.
It's so good. And I know we won't be the team that gets him fired because they're going to wait till December. But, like, and the team that got him fired was probably...
It was probably UVA.
It might have been the UVA game. I think the whispers really heated up once they lost the Georgia Tech game 66-31. That's probably, like, the one. But, man, like, being a part of it, I wish he would get fired after this game. I know he won't. But being, like, a small part of it's great.
Yeah, I would agree. To wrap us up here, just Dan, a final score prediction in this should be very entertaining game.
I'm doing Syracuse 59, Louisville 21.
I'm gonna go Syracuse 51, Louisville 31. I think Louisville barely covers.
Backdoor cover.
Yes, it's going
to
be
whomever is left on that roster because their backup quarterback just transferred.
Yeah, it will be a garbage time cover in a move that will piss bettors off everywhere. I really do think, like, I don't think this is a letdown look ahead spot to nod to solid verbal, but more of a Syracuse is just kind of like, okay, let's just get this over with. Type situation, like similar to the UConn game, really.
Like, I think had it been a different part of the year, it might have been a letdown look ahead. But because it's senior day, it's the last dome game. Like, I think they'll come out sharp.
You think Dungy goes ham and goes for like 500 yards and just tries to break every record he's got left?
I hope so. He's so close. I mean, he just passed Graves and Donovan, I think, for for what, total yardage?
Yeah, he's number one in total yardage now. He's the only guy in school history with over 10,000. He's not going to hit the yardage marks. I think he could get to 3,000 before the end of the season. He'd only be, I think, the second unique quarterback to get there.
Because I do kind of hope he gets to 3,000, 1,000. That'd be pretty cool.
I'd like to see. Yeah, I definitely like to see that.
He's going to flirt with it.
Yeah, more the 3,000 mark. The 1,000, if it happens, great. If not, I'm not really too broken up about it.
We've talked about, I mean, as for reasons we've discussed.
Yeah. But yeah, I think he's got some, and he's moving up the, I think he's only five short of tying Floyd Little for second most rushing touchdowns in school history, which is like weird for a school that's like known for running backs.
Yeah, I think, well, back in the day, people didn't play early on in their career. So I assume, I don't know off the top of my head if like, obviously I don't think Floyd played as a freshman, so I don't think that was a thing yet. But I mean, I would assume Floyd didn't even play like, that, I mean, someone can correct me. I don't have it in front of me, but I bet he didn't even play that much as a sophomore.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think, yeah.
And Dungy's
go for
off
it.
And on the whole time. So
no, yeah, Dungy's been like the fact that Dungy missed a lot of time in here is worth noting. Obviously, it's great to see that he was able to use the system to his advantage. Overall, really hope that we see a couple more records fall from him. SU is pretty close, I think. I know they fell back a little bit of the pace, but they're still on pace to break the record for like average points per game, which is like 42.5, something like that, from 1998. And I think going into last week, they were well ahead. I think they were like 44 or 45 points per game, very on brand. But yeah, I think they dropped back a little bit only because they were at 41. So. Hopefully we keep the pace going, get back on track with the record setting season that we were en route to.
Yeah, this game should really help.
I would concur. I think that's it for us here, Dan. Anything else this week?
No, we had a lot going on. This is one of the craziest times. One of the craziest parts of the year where we get basketball ramping up and football, surprisingly, in November, still a big part of our lives here. So, yeah, very excited.
Same. Plenty more where this came from on the podcast, on the site. We'll have a lot of coverage here, especially as football and basketball intersecting at a level that they really haven't yet in the history of this blog. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's going to be a lot of articles. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Blog Talk, and Go Orange.
Go Orange.